Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters. And it's February 15th, 2022.
I know.
The Ides of February. Actually, I think the Ides are maybe the 13th of a 28-day.
Oh, really? I didn't even know they had any.
It's different. Like Ides of March is because it's a 31-day month.
But so also something else. Yeah, whatever.
Is the Ones so, and the Ides. I forget. It's all Latin to me.
Speaking of, all right, this is off topic. But I notice you always tweet your Wordle squares.
It's because I'm really hopelessly bored, and
I don't know how you do that. I don't know how to get that blank.
Oh, I'll show you how to do it. I'm sure it's going to be a very, very quick passing fad. Yeah. But in a way, the way I describe it to people, I said, in a world where everybody's worried about Ukraine and Trump flushing things down toilets and pandemics and whatever, we all decided to spontaneously gather around the Wordle water cooler,
just do
something pointless and silly, and it won't last. But, in the short term,
well, there's other variations. I guess there's ab Wordle or absurd. Oh,
well, I'm
or
sure there'll be others like this as well. I confess I've been doing it. Yeah. Need to get into my strategies. All right.
Oh, I have a strategy. Yeah, but I've done it about 16 times, and mostly fours. I've gotten a few threes, two twos. I think my very first one was a two, so that was just pure luck because I didn't even have a strategy then. But anyway,
All right. In the last half hour, we talked a bit about the proposal to eliminate parking minimums, mm-hmm. right?
Affordable housing, is that right?
Which I believe they are already exempt under the AHO.
Right.
And there has been relaxed requirements. If the closer you were to public transit, the more possible you could simply be immediate. You could have reduced requirements or be completely exempt, if you were close to public transit. So that was part of the whole concept of transit-oriented development. But the further from transit you are, it has usually been the belief that, well, maybe you should be providing some parking on site if you're going to be doing at least a larger development, right? Right. Well, anyway, that's been the sort of the policy for some time. And so this would be a change to that, so that even if you were not near transit, this mm-hmm. proposal would say you do not need to provide any parking. So, though you might choose to do so anyway. But, where that goes, I don't know. I imagine there'll be at least a reduction in the requirement, if not an elimination. I think we're heading in that direction. Yeah. But it is interesting too, though, that those requirements are coupled with, not to get into the controversy of bike lanes and bus lanes mm-hmm. and all of that, but also allocation of on-street spaces to parking. If you say you don't have to do it on site, but then you start also removing the on-street parking as well, and which will affect things very unevenly. There are some neighborhoods where it's already tight, where it'll, really kind of be a real whack, and other places where it's like no big deal, right? I mean, I haven't ever seen any like back-to-back-to-back-to-back parking along Brattle Street, for example.
Right.
So, no big deal, right? But anyway, that's... those are some of the changes that are sort of happening here. But another thing that nobody's been talking about lately, but I'm sure they will soon enough.
Yeah.
Remember a few years ago, people were talking about proposals for car sharing.
Well, when you say car sharing, okay, go ahead.
Right. So there were proposals. I think there may have even been a zoning proposal to permit people to kind of co-own, you own a car and then many people in the community do it, but it's parked on somebody's property.
Okay, I don't actually remember a proposal, but yeah.
Yeah, there were also some proposals for allowing things like zip cars to be parked on private property, but then you'd have people from wherever either coming in and dropping off cars, day or night, whatever.
Like Airbnb,
just like with Airbnb, then there were some concerns that might actually become disruptive.
Right.
You know, there's also been a practice in Cambridge, not technically legal, of people to rent out the parking spaces that they do have on their property.
It's not, what do you mean it's not technically legal? I know people who do that.
Then,
well, wait, but when you, but what if it's a, what if it's an absentee owner? What if it's a management company? They can't rent out the space. Really? Oh, okay.
Keep it under your hat.
I don't know any of them personally. So
technically, according to the city regulations, I believe you are operating a commercial enterprise then if you're accepting money for it. It'd be one thing if you let your neighbors just park on your driveway.
Right. I see what you're saying.
It's a transaction. Then, you know, and I believe this is all sort of wrapped up into the vehicle trip reduction ordinance and all of that, that, you know, they didn't want to have a situation where people were commuting into Cambridge, parking their car on somebody's private property, and then walking to the subway to go into Boston or something like that. So that's really where the, I believe that's where the root of
Do you remember though, the Pats games, that all those people that lived around wherever that is, rented out their spaces? They overlooked that, I guess, because people made a lot of money
in the true spirit of the sports analogy, as they say, no whistle, no foul.
Yeah, I think that was all allowed. Yeah.
Right. So just because something is illegal doesn't mean people will fail to do it. And it's also a big difference between an exceptional thing, you know, sort of like, okay, it's, you know, if the Super Bowl was taking place, at, you know, here or something like that. But, you know, it's as opposed to an everyday commuter type of reality.
Right. Okay. So you're saying that never got off the ground.
You know, so technically, it's something you're not supposed to be doing. We do have people I've seen around where I live where, especially if the parking in a, well, there's a couple of things. If somebody has a larger building and they've got an underground parking garage and it costs $150 a month to park your car there, but you could opt out, then maybe you could rent your space to somebody else. But once again, technically illegal, I believe. And but there are other people who choose to park on the street and then rent out the space on their lot.
Wow.
Which is, you know, that's a little bit of a problem for those of us who need to park on the street too.
So. Well, that's the people under rent control were doing with their rent control units while they lived in Lincoln.
Somewhere. That's true. That's true. We all like to bend a rule here and there.
I know.
But anyway, the reason why I was just bringing it up here right now is that I ran into Craig Kelly. On Inman Street, and after Inman I joked right next to City Hall, I said I accused him of recidivism for coming back to City Hall, but he says no, I filed a zoning petition, and I'll just give the quick down and dirty version of it. I could also flash it up for people here.
Well, it isn't public. I mean, they haven't.
It's not. It doesn't matter. Well, it's public because it's been filed, well, so it's already a public record.
Yeah.
You know. So I think maybe I'll just sort of flash it here as we speak to it here. But basically, it's got a fancy name: Cambridge Transportation Carbonization and Congestion Mitigation Bill. Oh, we all laughed a little bit about that.
Yeah.
But basically, the two aspects of it here has to do with whether you should permit people to use on-site residential use for existing parking spaces for car shares, you know, to share a vehicle, and also for the possibility, if you have the capacity to do electric vehicle charging, to allow for electric vehicle charging to take place. And what he would like to do would be basically for all the residential zones across the city to make sharing of a car and electric vehicle charging on site possible. You know, so
there's no monetary.
I presume there would be some remuneration. Certainly, if you're going to plug in a car to get electric charge, there'd have to be some way of conducting a transaction.
But then that's going against what you're saying. The rules are about charging.
This is a zoning petition which changes the rules.
So why does he call it a bill? instead of a position.
It just felt like calling it a bill, I guess, you know.
Oh, well,
maybe as aspirations for running for Congress, I don't know. But
well, it's either a petition or it's legislation.
Yeah. I don't have strong feelings one way or another, but there's obviously going to be people who are going to object to the idea, just like they object to Airbnbs operating.
Right. We don't want all these cars coming on.
People coming and going, yeah. And effectively, you know, I mean, let's to be perfectly ridiculous. If electric vehicle charging is the future equivalent of today's gas stations, do you want everybody to be able to operate a gas station on the all up and down every block of the city, right? You know, I mean, that's kind of unfair, but. But basically, that would be a commercial enterprise, effectively, unless they were so commonplace that really it was only the neighbors on the block that were sharing the electric charging system. I mean, one thing. Well, one thing right now is that if I don't know what the percentage of motor vehicles in the city are that are electric vehicles now. But, you know, we all know where there are some places to charge them, either some people at home. Yeah. Some places alongside City Hall, a few parking lots here and there, but it's not like there's a widespread availability.
There's a couple. There's a
right, but that's a. But we're not talking about a lot.
And no, one or two at the most.
Right, I think there's some plans to turn some light poles, or maybe parking meter spaces mm-hmm. to have them do double duty as charging stations. There are places I've seen on Cambridge Street in Boston where they have some. So.
Yeah. No, they definitely can do it. It's just, yeah.
Right. But so I don't know what the future holds here and whether this is a good thing or a bad thing or whether it's acceptable to people or not. But I bring it up only because I think it's a conversation that's going to have to happen sooner or later. So yeah. I don't think it's a bad conversation to get started now. And where it goes, who knows? I mean, like a lot of zoning petition ideas, they don't go through on the first pass, a lot of them anyway. No. So there may be variations of the theme and maybe certain circumstances under which it's possible. Like if the lot was a certain size and you had at least 35 feet from the nearest neighbor or something like that. I don't know. But I appreciate the fact that it's being thrown into the fray. Even if it goes down in flames, you know, but I think it's a good conversation that's inevitably going to have to happen. There will come a day that people like me with gasoline powered cars will become the dinosaurs, you know.
I think that's going to be a long time coming.
I don't know about how long away, but because more and more motor vehicles.
Well, I don't think gas is going away. And I think, well, let's see, 2035, you won't be able to buy a gas powered vehicle. But most people keep their cars. My car is 7 years old.
A lot of people sell them pretty quick. Yeah. But anyway, I think that the conversation is something that's going to have to happen. Yeah. And you know, and it's kind of nice to sort of see some creativity bubbling up, even if it's something that will not survive in the current form. We'll see, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
Now, on a completely different matter, there's, this, you know, we are in this rather unprecedented period where this we have a city council that is simultaneously trying to hire all three of the positions that it hires.
That they are
a city manager, a city clerk, and a city auditor.
Yeah.
And possibly with a little bit of redefinition of the job description for maybe auditor, maybe even clerk, I don't know. And, you know, tomorrow night, I believe, there's the first public session
for people to give
input. There have already been focus groups of various kinds put together.
And I guess that the results of those are available somewhere.
I'll have to look them up. I haven't been following it closely.
If you find it, you should post it on your site.
I will. I've been a little cynical about this whole process.
Yeah. I think it's so over the top. It's ridiculous to me. But
you know, if this is a process where there are 9 city councilors don't really know how to do this, even those who have been through it technically in the past. But not really doing it in the past, you know. I think there are some potential pitfalls in this process. It's one thing to say we're gathering input, but if the focus groups are a little too focused? I mean, in other words, you've already decided the outcomes.
Well, and then there's I think I said this in an email to you. Is that, are they going to start these big public meetings with an explanation of what is a city manager and what's our plan of government and why we have it? Because I don't think people even know this stuff.
I absolutely
agree with
you.
They equate the city manager with being like a mayor or something, and it isn't. It's different. We need that education.
I'll give you a fine example of that. I saw one email blast that went out from one of the primary political organizations a year or two ago, saying how we need to get an activist manager who's going to be focusing on this issue and that issue. Reading that, and I'm thinking to myself, do you people know what?
Perfect.
No,
that's not the whole point.
Right.
I feel like this is ridiculous.
There are city managers who have actually put high priorities on certain things like housing development or whatever. Yeah. But really, let's reminder to all.
It is the job of the city council
to determine the policies.
Set those policies,
and
right.
It is the job of the manager to manage the departments and to execute the policies.
Right.
So it is not the manager's job to be
the
front man.
They make it sound like he's this king that we're going to have to control his powers.
I think some people have a kind of a childlike view of the manager, like, oh, the big bad manager, he's such a bad dictator.
Yeah, he's
That's
not listening
not
to the
really how it works.
That.
It's never really worked that way. And no matter how many, if people have some hurt feelings because of a bad experience or something, I have my biggest concern, and I don't know how much of this is public or will be public until after it's all said and done, is that how do you get from the big advertisement for anybody want to be city manager to reviewing a short list of finalists? And that will be done through a screening committee. And how that process and who's on that screening committee is extremely important in this process.
That hasn't been defined in any of the city, in like Malin's meeting.
In the original government operations meeting, and I have it posted, it gives like a big long list of possibilities, but it doesn't really say how it will be balanced or whether.
Well, that's obviously going to be talked about.
Or not. In my experience.
Everything is too much out in the public now. It's going to be brought up.
I will say, and I followed this stuff pretty closely, when they were doing the last city manager search that led to Rich Rossi.
Followed
Bob Healy.
And
then the next one that led to Louis DePasquale succeeding Rich Rossi, I didn't know who was on the screening committee at all until it was over.
But you have to say this is so different because those two came from within the administration, and it's been a real clear mandate. We do not want someone from within the administration.
Remember that when Louis was chosen, the three finalists were one was Louis, and then two were not from inside Cambridge.
True, but what about Rossi? Was he just appointed? He didn't.
No, he went. There was a process. Now that I remember it, they had fiddled and diddled so thoroughly that they reached the point where, in fact,
they didn't have outside candidates.
That's right. They simply chose him. I remember going to meetings where they talked about the process and the schedule, whatever, never came to be.
But wasn't he like the next in line? I mean, wasn't he the
There is no next in line.
But wasn't he like what Lisa Peterson was?
The deputy city manager is not the manager in waiting and has never been.
No, I know that. Well, then what was Rich Rossi? What was his position?
He was deputy city manager.
Okay, all right.
It's so just that as Bob Healy described Richie at one of those meetings. Yeah. He's the best athlete in the draft.
Yeah.
Or something like words to that effect.
It's not in waiting, but he clearly could step into that
It was always the most natural choice anyway.
Right.
And to me, I was pleased when they just picked him rather than you know, screwed around for a long, long time, though there were people who were very outraged by the choice because, you know, they felt, oh, the fix was in. But at that time, in that context, really, it was the only logical thing to do.
Right.
It was a bit of a different process when they were picking Louis, but apparently he was so impressive as the, even though he was the inside candidate, that even the other finalists kind of knew it. One of them actually backed out before it was even done.
Yeah, and his background and just the budget and all
that. It was a perfect match. Yeah.
So this is going to be a whole different.
Well, will it be? We don't know. Yeah. I mean, there are already some people, and I think they're wrong, who already feel that some inside person has been chosen. I don't think that's true. If anything, my concern would be that they have decided to not even consider anybody who's an inside candidate. And to me, that's very short-sighted as well. And I'm not saying they should pick an inside candidate, but they shouldn't exclude anybody.
But the whole charter up in the air thing, whether we're going to have—
doing it in the context of some uncertainty about the long-term future of the charter itself is, I think, kind of, that would affect an applicant's desire to pursue it vigorously or not, potentially.
Right.
So anyway, where that's going, who knows, right? But they will, but there is a meeting tomorrow evening.
I'll watch it, but I'm also DVR. Did you get my note about that there's this joint transportation meeting held?
I'll look into it.
That's kind of unfortunate. That's why,
Well, we'll see. We'll see. There was one other topic I wanted to at least mention, which is actually was part of an ordinance committee meeting not so long ago about, I think they sometimes refer to it as the Budo amendments. Basically, it's building energy, reporting something, disclosure ordinance, whatever. Which they already have something in place, but what they wanted to do and what stands before the council right now, though I believe it is under some legal review, is they want to change the amendment. So it's not just about requiring properties above a certain size to report their energy use, but to in fact impose strict mandates on reduction by fixed dates down toward eventually having a net zero energy use on site.
Now, and are there fines or something associated if you don't reach
Fines or, that's part of the question is in my view, if you basically say, well, if you can't meet it, you can pay money into a fund or you can buy renewable energy credits, which to me is sort of an accounting workaround. But to whatever degree, it basically means that you would be required to fork over money.
This is for commercial entities or buildings over a certain size. Right?
It would also apply, and I think this is where it could be potentially problematic
to extensive
research facilities, university facilities, et cetera. And that would include things like laboratories.
I don't know about that.
To me, in my view, if you believe altogether in net zero as a goal, you have to acknowledge the fact that buildings in the Northeast are not the same as buildings in Texas. Buildings that are operating major lab facilities are not the same thing as passive little residential buildings in terms of the physical capacity to meet these standards. Mm-hmm. So if it's just ridiculously onerous, you're basically saying then you can't build the lab building effectively, or if you must or feel you choose to, you have to fork over money. And then it runs into this issue about, is that a tax? And the city can't just arbitrarily impose a tax without it being authorized by the state. So I think there's some real unanswered questions here.
So what was the last, what's the status?
It's still in process and we'll see where it goes. Okay. But anyway, it's coming. But one of the reasons why I wanted to mention it was that there was actually one aspect of the ordinance committee meeting that I found actually really offensive. And it had to do with a point where Patty Nolan, when I believe some people from MIT expressed some desire to be at the table in the drafting of regulation.
Oh, I remember that.
Referred to them and basically drew a parallel between allowing MIT to be at the table and talking about setting regulations that would affect their ability to do labs and such.
Right.
With somehow that. Being analogous to allowing tobacco companies to come before the legislature to write the rules.
I thought that was horribly
offensive.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, I have my own personal issues with MIT because, hey, I lost my job there, right? But the thing is in terms of them as a research institute and sort of fundamentally doing the right thing.
They're involved.
They are expert and they know an awful lot more about building management, building construction than Patty Nolan ever will in her lifetime. So to me, to have one counselor basically jumping up there in that way and likening MIT to a tobacco company was ridiculous.
Was she the only, was this?
Well, she got shot down a bit like by Mark McGovern for that analogy. Okay. But, you know, it was, you know, I mean, you want to be a city councilor, you know, play fair, just play fair and be honest. Yeah. You know, that would be a big
help. Be reasonable.
I know that's not permitted because, you know, we're so busy being idealistic and zealous that reasonability just gets thrown out the window sometimes. So that's coming. Another item, I think it's been under discussion. We only have a minute here, but I think it's kind of an interesting question is there's this ARPA money, this more COVID relief money. Right. And it was a lot of it just is basically granted to cities with no strings attached.
It was $65 million.
Right. So some of it is pretty much, you know, already pretty much promised out, but there is some political desire to basically to create sort of a public assistance function out of this and do direct payments, which they could not normally do because of anti-aid amendment. And I think that's it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Establishing a something like that where there's no, it's a one-time non-recurring process, though, is itself somewhat questionable.
Well, we'll see where that goes. Okay.
Anyway, it looks like we're just about out of time.
Yeah. So we'll see you March 1st.
Yeah, that's right. In like a lion, out like a lamb.
Okay. Bye.